up.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we are expecting Arctic cold temperatures in Arrowhead Stadium this Sunday. We've been talking about it all week, as how much of the weather is going to be a factor in the game against the Chiefs and the Patriots. One thing, though, I will say is Bill Belichick yesterday in his press conference, he didn't care. He didn't say, but that's what you expect Bill Belichick to say. But the overriding thing is that the cold weather, it does limit you a little bit in what you want to do passing the football. Now, maybe not a lot, because these guys are, you know, very accustomed. A lot of these guys are accustomed, especially on the Patriots side, catching football in cold weather. But the ball is harder. It hits you differently. And we don't expect to have any elements in the game on Sunday. We don't expect to have wind and snow and ice falling from the sky. It's just supposed to be frigid. Just frigid, clear and frigid. And that's going to be different. That's going to at least aid the teams doing what they want to do, because they don't have to battle a wind chill factor of minus 25 degrees because it's blowing pretty hard, or the fact that there's some ice coming down from the sky making the ball really slippery. The ball is just going to be cold, and that's really it. I mean, and the Patriots and the Chiefs both should be able to do with what they want to do, and we should have a pretty good game. I don't think the elements in that game are going to have an impact. Now, when I look at the NFC, one of the factors that I think about is, and we talked about it with Vincent Bonsignor of The Athletic earlier in this show, was C.J. Anderson has emerged as another threat in that running game for Sean McVay's offense. We think of Sean McVay, they fling it around like it's a West Coast Big 12. That's not what they do. There's just what Sean McVay does really well is he has different variations on simple plays, plays that a lot of teams use, but there's so many different variations that they can use on those plays. So it always throws the defense for a little bit of a loop, and you have to account for a lot of different people. CJ Anderson joined the team late. He had been with Denver, he had been with Carolina, he had been with Oakland, could not find a home. He lands with the Rams, and he's averaging over 140 yards a game in the last three, and he gouged up the Dallas Cowboys. Can they do it again? Sheldon Rankins is out for the Saints. Now, that defensive line and that defensive front for New Orleans, second best against the run this season. But Rankins' absence is going to be a factor. How much of a factor for a unit that already is good against the run? How will that affect the Rams, who may have to sling it a little bit more if they can shut down both Anderson and Gurley in the running game? This game should be good on Sunday. SB Nation Radio.
Are you wearing your hat too much to cover that hairline?
Well, yes, I am.
Go to forhims.com/cheer for help. That's forhims.com/cheer.
No matter what you are.
This is SB Nation AM. On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, I know this song, but I'm drawing a blank on who did it and what the name of the song is. This is like elevator music. I hear this in Muzak or something.
Yep.
All right, who is it and what's the name of the song?
The band is called Badfinger.
Badfinger, okay. No, I've heard of them.
The song is No Matter What.
No Matter What? Okay. Yeah, I've heard this song a million times.
Oh, yeah. It's,
yeah, I just...
Again,
I just
it's that first part where you just say, no matter what you
Exactly.
But you never really heard the rest of the song. You just hear that part.
Well, if you're just joining us, Throwback Thursday, we're honoring 1971. This is Super Bowl History Week, and we're doing Super Bowl history in the next couple days. Going back in time to remind on this date in Super Bowl history, 1971, Super Bowl V is the Colts beat the Dallas Cowboys in that game against on a last-second field goal, or it should say a final-second field goal. So the New England Patriots head to the AFC title game. They're going to play the Chiefs at Arrowhead Stadium. It's a tough place to play, and the Chiefs are high-flying fun, and Patrick Mahomes threw 50 touchdown passes this season, and the Patriots are making their eighth AFC title game. And boy, is Father Time just knocking on Tom Brady's door? Well, it doesn't appear to be, but you know, man, that dynasty's about ready to come to an end, right? Well, the Patriots seem to think you think that. Julian Edelman thinks you think that. They made t-shirts with the Patriots logo that says, Bet Against Us. that goes in hand with Tom Brady's everyone thinks we suck comment at the end of the game last week against the Chargers. All right. I'm just going to say this. I know the national media has been waiting for the Patriots to turn, right? You can't be this good for this long, right? And the Patriots keep defying the conventional wisdom of the league. But this is not really any different than we've seen in the years past during the regular season when the Patriots would struggle at times. Remember, they lost to Kansas City a few years ago and everybody lost their mind, right? The Patriots have been a team that we've kind of not... Some of us have been rooting for their failure, but others are just waiting for their failure, right? Waiting for the for them not to complete the deal, right? Just because it's not supposed to be like that, but they keep defying the odds. I'll tell you what, Julian Edelman, I'm not going to bet against you because I'm a smart football guy, and I know you guys win these type of games all the time.
All the time.
All the time. In fact, I have no idea how this game is going to play out, but if I'm a Kansas City Chiefs fan, I'm absolutely nervous that I'm playing the Patriots, even if I'm playing at home. They're well prepared and they execute well and they know your weaknesses and can exploit them.
Yep.
They may not look flashy, but that's exactly how they win games. And I don't get this. And listen, if you need motivation for this kind of thing, God bless you. Okay, but I gotta be honest with you, I'm really surprised the Patriots feel the need to publicly make this kind of it's us against the world underdog thing. That's not their MO. Their MO is we show up, we do our business, and we win. Or we show up, we do our business, and you're scared. Where is this coming from? This anger and bitterness that everybody's against them. And why in 2019 has it been any different than any other year that we've wanted other teams to make it to the Super Bowl other than them?
No, basically what, you know, I'm going to use a movie analogy here, but what the Patriots are, they're Iceman from Top Gun.
Yeah.
Where they just,
that's right.
They do everything by the book. They're methodical, they're boring, but then as soon as you make a mistake, they capitalize all over it.
Now, I know Julian Edelman is there. These shirts are available at Edelman's website for $29.99. So I'm sure that the capitalist that is Julian Edelman. But this is a little deeper. This shirt isn't made if it wasn't an underlying belief that everybody thinks they're going to lose. And you know what? When I talk to people, I don't find anybody that thinks they're going to lose. I find people that thinks they could lose because the Chiefs are that good. But I don't hear anybody saying, the Chiefs, they're going to roll.
No, in fact...
Who would be dumb enough to make that statement?
I would make the argument that more people thought they would lose to the Chargers than they are saying
absolutely
they would lose to the Chiefs. Because I think what happened was that, you know, everyone said, oh, they're beatable. The Chargers will definitely take care of them. Then we saw them play and we're like, just kidding.
Yeah, right.
This Patriots team is, you know, they're built for the Super Bowl again.
This us against the world thing, I just...
God, they're living it up.
They are living it up.
They want it so bad to... It's like, yeah, you know what? They're an underdog for the first time in a long time, and they just... I mean, they're beside themselves. They're treating it as if they're like, you know, 20-point underdogs. And it's like, no, you guys are just simply underdogs because the Chiefs have a better record with the number one team and are playing at home.
Yeah, and by the way, if you want to talk about how usually the point spread works, a lot of times I'm certainly not an expert, but
no, we've proven that all year.
Right, we proved that all year. But the home field is usually a 3-point favorite.
Yeah,
right. That's usually how it works, regardless of who you are. It's just automatically built into the spread. If you get to this level, you're playing a 13-3 team with 50 touchdown passes from their young quarterback, and you're on the road, and you might be technically the underdog from a betting standpoint. But I'll be honest with you: go find 10 people that are absolutely positive the Chiefs are going to win this weekend. I bet you couldn't find them in Kansas City. That the Chiefs are absolutely going to win this weekend. You're playing a juggernaut postseason franchise. Tom Brady has been favored in 67 straight games in which he's the starter. Come on, that goes past his suspension.
Yeah, and I guarantee
67 straight games he's been the starter. He's been favored in the game,
and I can guarantee Chiefs players are more nervous about playing the Patriots than the Patriots are playing wanting to play against the Chiefs.
one of the factors in this game is going to be Patrick Mahomes' ability and confidence when things aren't going to go right, because they're not going to go right all the time for 60 minutes. I've seen Ben Roethlisberger, for example, get tight, bad throws, bad decisions. Whoops, here go the Patriots the other way for a touchdown. Blake Bortles and the Jaguars did it exactly the same way last year. Sometimes you get Phillip Rivers last week. When the Patriots can strike and strike quickly, right? You could get into a three and out early. Before you know it, you're down 14-0. And what happens is the mountain that you thought you were going to have to climb gets twice as big, right? All of a sudden, it's not just beating the Patriots. It's now beating the Patriots who have a 14-point lead on you. Right. And the Colts were able to, when the Colts did this, 10 years ago, whatever it was, before they went to Super Bowl 41. So it was longer than that. In the AFC title game, it was a monumental move by Peyton Manning and the Colts, because they were ready to get buried by the Patriots in that game, and yet came back and won it. Teams don't do that with the Patriots in the postseason. So if you give the ball to New England, right, and they score, and then you three and out, or maybe you get a first down or two, but eventually you have to punt, and they score again, all of a sudden, that's when the nerves start kicking in. Your game plan has been disrupted. Your thought process has been disrupted. Okay, we have a mountain to climb, and we're playing a team that is able to score two times quickly. That's how it works with New England. They're that efficient, and that's what happened to the Chargers. Before you know it, you're out of the game, and you're playing catch-up. So gone is the running game. Gone is anything else that you can do. You got to start slinging the ball everywhere to get back into that game and get back into the game quickly. Now, does Patrick Mahomes respond to that like he did in week 6? Possibly. Maybe. Right? Or does he realize the magnitude of the moment, Super Bowl on the line, city dying for a championship, et cetera, and shrink under pressure? There has been nothing all year to indicate that this kid shrinks under the pressure. Remember how big that Monday night game against the Rams was? Remember how much we hyped that up? That's a regular season game. Okay. Not as pressurized as the AFC Championship, but the world was saying to both of those teams, oh, put on a show for us. We know both of you could score. We want, and they did, and they both did. And Mahomes is throwing passes across his body. He's been doing that all season. But this is different. This is a Patriots team. The idea that everybody thinks they're going to lose is nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. Again, I walk through Kansas City and find 10 people that are 100% certain the Chiefs are going to win. I doubt you'll find them. They know their own history, and they know this team that's coming in to play them. We've all watched them throttle teams in the AFC title game. And if they don't win the AFC title game because they went on the road to play Denver, for example, they put up a hell of a fight, and you do not knock them out.
If they don't win, I remember what it took. It took the Broncos putting Brady down on his rear end, 20-plus times?
20-plus times, right.
In that game? And the Patriots were never out of the game.
Never.
I mean, the Broncos' defense was relentless. It was the toughest test they really had all during the whole postseason. And Tom Brady just kept getting up and kept fighting back. It's a tough out.
It is a tough out, an absolute tough out. All right, 800-777-2907. You can hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, and that's Ron with two N's. Coming up, the Jalen Hurts decision to go to Oklahoma. Could he win the Heisman Trophy? We'll discuss that next on SB Nation AM.
Yes! Here comes Aim! Moses was a Cajun. He lived by himself in the swamp. He hunted alligator for a living. He just knock him in the head with a stump. The Louisiana law gonna get you, Amos. It ain't legal.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Okay, I have no idea who this is and what this song is. We're celebrating 1971, by the way.
Yeah, I only chose this because of the artist, because I actually really like this guy as an artist.
All right.
I don't know if I like him more as a singer or an actor, but I've always one specific role for him. The song is called Amos Moses.
Amos Moses.
And it's written by the great Jerry Reed.
Okay.
And I always liked Snowman.
All right.
If I was to be in a real life Smokey and the Bandit situation, I really do believe I'd be Snowman.
All right, very good. Very good. Okay. Well, I was completely stumped by this.
But this song is literally, I mean, this is 1971. This is in the top 50.
Top 50? Really? Yeah. It was, really?
Yeah,
My goodness.
I'm trying to look for the actual spot that it held.
Great. By the way, in case you join us, we do Throwback Thursday. We get familiar with songs from a particular year, and we're honoring the Super Bowl V anniversary today, where the Colts beat the Cowboys in 1971. So there you go. Jalen Hurts is off to Oklahoma to be the quarterback of the Sooners. He can play immediately because he's a graduate transfer. What's interesting is the bit of news that Austin Kendall had originally, and I have to use that word originally because we're got a change in this story, was denied a transfer to West Virginia. Now, coaches don't like it when their players want to transfer to a school within the conference, but he later rescinded that and was allowing Austin Kendall to transfer to become a Mountaineer in West Virginia. But Jalen Hurts, you can say, when Jalen Hurts announced that he, not really announced, I shouldn't say announced, because that wasn't, he never came out and publicly said, I've decided to stay at Alabama. He just stayed at Alabama. He didn't make a big splash about it. He just didn't leave. But I was very, very supportive of the idea of getting the heck out of Tuscaloosa as fast as you can when Tua Tagovailoa was clearly going to be Nick Saban's choice of quarterback. When we knew over the summer that it wasn't really the quarterback controversy that we were led to believe, that in the end it was going to be Tua's job. He came on, won the national championship, throws a better ball than Jalen Hurts. Despite 26-2, Tua was the future of the Crimson Tide offense. I said, listen, you got one time to play college football. And if you want to play college football, you want to play college football. You don't want to sit on the bench and stay with a team where you're not going to play. And if you can be a starter, be a starter. If it means leaving, leave. But what Jalen Hurts did was surprising to me. He was willing to stick it out another season at Alabama. And by doing so, it really warmed the hearts over for the fan base that now embrace him as one of their own. He is a legendary Alabama player. A lot of it is because of what he did in helping Alabama win this year's national championship by beating Georgia in the SEC title game and playing two seasons, winning one title, losing another to Clemson. But nevertheless, he becomes one of those quarterbacks that Alabama fans will remember very, very fondly because of how he handled this entire ordeal. Now, I'm on the record as saying, when Kelly Bryant realized Trevor Lawrence was going to be the quarterback at Clemson, he got out of there. And that's fine. I'm totally okay with that. But it also means Jalen Hurts could also be fine staying and being a backup and being part of a championship team, even though they didn't win the national title. He knew throughout the whole time he was there, we are the team to beat. All right, I may be a backup, but I'm a backup on the team that is going to win a national championship. Now, obviously they didn't, but that's the feeling that Hurts was having while he was backing up Tua. That offense was unstoppable until it was finally stopped. But nevertheless, he goes to Oklahoma and he's going to be working with Lincoln Riley, who's now been the head coach of the back-to-back Heisman Trophy winners. Now, does Hurts have the ability to win a Heisman? Is he a kind of quarterback that can put up the kind of Heisman numbers you need? It's not just about wins. It is about statistical perception. Can he play well enough at Oklahoma to beat where everybody's eyes are going to be with Trevor Lawrence, and there are going to be some other names that are going to be popping up. Well, Ron and I talked about that the Heisman is won usually late in the season. We have an idea early who we like, and then things change. There's a game in particular that we start noticing other candidates a lot better, and then we start putting in perspective what they're doing, and all of a sudden they become the front runner. Kyler Murray did it this year. He wasn't the front runner at the beginning of the season, but boy, he poured it on late. RG3 won his Heisman late, right? I mean, you could go down the list of Heisman Trophy winners and find ones that weren't favored at the beginning of the season, but boy, really kicked it in to the next gear and not stole it by any means, but took it away from the favorites that we've had for week in and week out. Can Hurts do that? I don't know if he's that kind of quarterback. I don't know if he's a Heisman Trophy quarterback, but I do know this. If he's looking to get really good at that position, he's going to the right guy.
Well,
Lincoln Riley.
He'll be in the conversation.
Absolutely.
But like you said, I mean, you know, right now, we can say it now like we did at the beginning of the college football season this year. We can just hand it to Trevor Lawrence now.
Yeah.
I mean, but again, we said at the beginning of the year it was going to be Tua Tagovailoa. Why even bother going through the Heisman vote? Why even bother do this? Why even bother do that? It's Tua's award. And then all of a sudden, Kyler Murray just kept putting together this resume, kept getting stronger and stronger. And maybe Tua not playing full games, maybe that hurt his stock a little bit. I don't know. I can't imagine it did. But Kyler Murray was just that much better. And who's to say that, you know, I mean, I have all feeling in the world that Trevor Lawrence is going to light the league on fire or the season on fire next year. But who's to say that Jalen Hurts can't perform well? I mean, he's going to have to throw it a lot.
Such an interesting look, though, for Riley. Look, in the end, I'm really glad that he let Austin Kendall go to West Virginia as a graduate transfer. When you're a graduate transfer, you can play immediately. And I'm very glad he did that, because to accept a graduate transfer and not allow another one to transfer, that's a terrible look. That is an absolute terrible look for Lincoln Riley. It's a flawed system anyway, where kids have to, if you're not a grad transfer, you have to sit out a year. Coaches can block you from transferring to other programs. It's a flawed system when you think about the kind of limitations that are on students, but not on the flip side of coaches. But you know what? In reality, a lot of businesses are like that. Listen, if you work in a contract business, if you're you're contracted to perform a duty for a company for, let's say, 2 years, your boss can leave. You may be stuck to your contract, right? I mean, there's plenty of situations in real life where you may be obligated to something and your boss may not be obligated to something. So in college football, in college basketball for that matter, you're obligated to the school. The coach can take off, but you have to suffer if you want to leave. You may not get the transfer option that you wish, and you have to sit out a year unless you're a graduate transfer. It's just a bad look for Lincoln Riley, though. It reminds me of coaches who in the NFL who block assistants from interviewing for promotional jobs. So if you're like a quarterback's coach and you're interviewing for an OC of another team, the team requests you and you get blocked. You know, look, if you're in the NFL, you're all in the same business, right? You all want to be, you know, you never know when you're up and when you're down, when you're going to be looking for work, when you're not going to be looking for work. You know you're going to get fired eventually. That's the life of a coach in that league. So don't make waves for yourself by, you know, if your assistant is up for a promotion with another team, let them go. Let them interview. I mean, it's everybody does it. Everybody helps, you know, helps out the younger people rise up the ranks. Most coaches do it. Bill Walsh was legendary for that. He would let his assistants interview for any job that they wanted that allowed them to better themselves and their family. But in the college game, it's all about, I can't let that kid go to West Virginia. I mean, if I lose to him, I'm never going to hear the end of it from my fan base. Get over yourself. Just let him go. And I'm glad he did. I'm glad he finally did. But Jalen Hurts is a perfect, look, his story is great when you think about it. He's being let go to go on and become a starter somewhere else, and probably a starter at a major program like Oklahoma. We'll see whoever else is in camp, but I would like to think he's going to get the starting gig, given his resume and his background and his experience. But Alabama fans are warmly embracing this as, thanks for staying. Thanks for being good with this. Thanks for having some character. Thanks for not running off the handle when your father was making those comments publicly about your desire to get out of town. You stayed when we needed you the most. You provided us an SEC championship. And while the team fell short of its ultimate goal, you're part of this family forever. 26-2 as a starter, a national title a few years ago, two other national title game appearances. To me, Jalen Hurts wins. Oh, actually, three, I should say. He wins the award for just being part of this team no matter what. Doesn't mean Kelly Bryant was wrong for bailing on Clemson four games in when he said, that's enough, I'm out. But at the same time, he handled it better than people around him. His camp handled everything. Jalen Hurts took his demotion in the title game against Georgia in stride. Look, he was about ready to lose back-to-back national championships. He was about ready to become the Alabama quarterback that would lose two titles. Tua Tagovailoa came in, rescued the Tide, and yet Jalen Hurts, you could see him celebrating with Tua as if he had won that title on the field. He had been a consummate teammate, and all the noise surrounding him this summer was not a good look, but he made it a better look by staying and going right through the season and then saying, you know what? Now it's time for me to go and play and finish out my college career. Because when I look back on my college career, I do want to have playing time. I want to make most of the opportunity of playing college football. And it is not going to be one more year of playing in mop-up duty for Alabama. I love Alabama, but I've got to go play college football. So good luck, Jalen Hurts. And you're going to the right guy in Lincoln Riley. Karen Loftus is going to join us, WGNO ABC 26 in New Orleans. How the Saints are going to look Sunday against the Rams in Rams Saints Part 2, but this time for the Super Bowl. That's next on SB Nation Radio.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
Oh, Black Sabbath? Yes. 1971? Yeah, yeah, Black Sabbath. Okay.
Paranoid.
Paranoid as we get we celebrate 1971 in the celebration of Super Bowl V between the Colts and the Cowboys. Karen Loftus joins us from ABC 26 in New Orleans as we get ready for the NFC Championship game. How are you, Karen?
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm good. How are you?
Good. All right, so Karen, let's get with the Saints here. Sheldon Rankins is out. The defensive line, this defensive front, second best against the run. Rams run the ball. So how are they going to fix that?
Yeah, that's definitely a big part of this game is going to be on the defensive line for the Saints with Sheldon Rankins out. Some of the other guys are going to have to step up. You have Taylor Stallworth, one of the rookies on the team. He's ready to step in there. And then Tyler Davison, both of those guys are going to get some more snaps. And then they also signed Tyron Walker, who's another guy at defensive tackle. And, you know, they're going to have to make it work. I mean, Sheldon Rankins is invaluable to that defensive line, and I think that's a huge concern because they know the Rams are going to run the ball. They know that the weapons that they have, Todd Gurley and C.J. Anderson, they know it's going to be physical, and they know they're going to come at them, and they know that that's their job. They have to stop those two guys.
Michael Thomas had a big game against the Rams in the last meeting, and you know, there was a lot made about that, but nevertheless, do you think he'll have a big game again against the Rams, or are the Rams' defense going to adjust and sort of limit him? He's been very effective, but I wonder how the Rams will now try to limit him given what he did to them during the regular season.
Right, and that's obviously something that's on their radar. When a guy gets more than 200 yards receiving against you the last time, I think that's going to be a point of emphasis to try to contain him. And, of course, Aqib Talib is back. He wasn't in the game the last time they played. And, you know, Michael Thomas against Peters was a cakewalk for him, obviously. So I think that they're definitely going to key on Thomas, but we've seen that before, and Thomas gets that, has been getting that all season. And Ted Ginn is healthy. He can make plays. Traquan Smith, he's there. He can make plays. So it might be a little bit more spread out, but I think Thomas is still going to have, you know, normal numbers for himself. Maybe not a 200-yard game, but I'd say he's going to get his.
Drew Brees, we had a conversation earlier this week with our Patriots person and talked about Brady, right? And we said, listen, 41 years old, is father time ticking away at it even a little bit, even when you just get into the minutia of his daily work? Is there anything about Brees, and again, 32 touchdowns, almost 4,000 yards, so it says no, but is he looking at any point like, all right, he's 40, but he's pushing against it?
You know, it's funny that you say that because I've noticed a couple times this season, he's the last one to get up from stretching. Like yesterday at practice, everybody was, you know, had already broken off into their groups, and he was still back there just doing a little bit more stretching. And honestly, if that's what he needs to do to put up the numbers that he's doing this season, hey, man, if you need, you know, 90 more seconds, do what you got to do. So I think the recovery aspect of it and just, you know, stretching a little bit more, taking care to mind your recovery in the process of, you know, recovering after games and stuff. If that's making the difference for him to have a little bit more in the tank this year, then, you know, so be it.
How we always make enough about coach and player relationship. Give us a little insight on the Drew Brees, Sean Payton relationship, because it's been long and it's been successful.
It really has been. And those two are just completely in sync. And when you ask either one about it, you know, they just know what the other person is doing. They're on the same page as far as anticipating play calling and just completely, they know each other's tendencies in every single situation. Those two guys have seen everything on the field, every single situation. And I think that's what makes them so good. I mean, they're 6-0 in the playoffs at home. That's just a duo that you don't want to bet against those guys. They know how to anticipate situations and they know how to handle things that come their way. And the other part of that is that the team sees that and they have a lot of faith in what those two bring to the table as far as preparation and knowledge of the game.
When you look at this game, and again, it is a rematch, but in the championship games or in the postseason, really, no matter when you play them, defenses get better. If there's a little bit more tape or you get more experience, there's adjustments. Do you expect this game, however, to still be the kind of high-scoring game that we saw during the regular season?
I do, but maybe a little bit less. I was thinking maybe like 35-28 type of range. But I think these offenses are still super high powered and they're going to put up the points. And yes, it is the playoffs. But that being said, I mean, that's when you get those extra wrinkles in the, you know, some of the play calling and some of these things that, you know, you don't really see during the regular season. It's like all bets are off. And I think that with two offensive minds, like Sean Payton and like McVay, I mean, it's going to be a fun one to watch.
Karen Loftus joins us, WGNO ABC 26 in New Orleans, as we preview the Saints and the Rams. When did you realize during the season, at any point, lost to Tampa Bay early in the season, a little game against the Browns, I think in week two. When did you notice, oh, this is a really good, this Saints team has really come together, both offensively and defensively. This could be really special.
That's a good question. I don't know if there was necessarily one game. It was maybe just a slow build up into the bye week where you're like, okay, well, you string four together. Okay, we got something good going. And just the momentum shift in that locker room where they were very unwavering. That loss to the Bucks to start the season didn't really faze them at all. And then they rattle off 10 straight.
Yeah.
10, 11 straight. And, you know, it's been a slow build this entire season, and the energy in the locker room has always been there. And I think it's just taken a while for, I guess, maybe national media to realize that they were actually legitimate. I think it might have been the Falcons game on Thanksgiving, where I was like, the Saints are the best team in the NFL. And somebody said, well, easy does it. And I'm like, no, I really think that they're the best team in the NFL. So maybe that was the point, was the Thanksgiving game where I was like, they can do this.
I want to talk about one of my new favorite players in the league, Taysom Hill. I love whatever he does, I enjoy. So what is
Everybody does.
Yeah, everybody does. First of all, we see guys like this who are situational and do really great and they become fan favorites. So how popular is he in New Orleans as like a cult figure? And actually, what does he do? What does he add to the New Orleans team?
Right. So the nickname for him has sort of been like the Swiss Army knife of the team.
Right.
And that I've actually seen a t-shirt at one of the local boutiques here that had, you know, a Swiss Army knife and it had all of his different positions, everything that he played on each tool there. And it's just been really cool to see. I think he is sort of a fan favorite just because whatever you need, he's going to do it, and he's going to do it well. And I credit Sean Payton so much with this, and he says this especially when talking about the draft or bringing in free agents and stuff, is that he has a clear vision for every single player that he brings in. And Taysom Hill is a perfect example of that. Like, yes, he's listed as a quarterback on the roster, but Sean Payton knows his skill set and he's able to think outside of the box. And the fact that Taysom Hill is also willing to do these other things, like you want to put him on punt return, sure. You want to have him, you know, running the ball, whatever you want him to do, he's going to do it. And it's been really fun to see. And it's, you know, you look out there and you're like, oh, Taysom's out there. And I think all of us, well, you know what? I'm going to speak for myself. I can't wait till Taysom Hill throws the ball to Drew Brees. That's what I want.
I ask this of everyone during this week, and we talk about cities, and I love to get the real local perspective of what a team means to a city. We think we have an idea about the Saints in New Orleans because of Katrina, the Super Bowl that was won a few years later. But this team, how it incorporates itself into the fabric of New Orleans, what this weekend means, what a Super Bowl appearance part two would mean for the city. Give us an idea of where the Saints and the city of New Orleans blend together.
You know, so this is my second year here in New Orleans, and it's been incredible to see just how interconnected the Saints are with this city. I mean, the Saints are New Orleans, and when the Saints are winning, this city is completely different. I mean, everybody's happy. You know, I don't even know if you have, like, full conversations with people. It's like you just walk down the street and it's like, who dat? And that's just how what everybody says is just who dat. And everybody's behind it. You have, you know, the Choppa style has become the anthem of the team, and everybody doing the Teddy Bridgewater bike dance, and it's just the energy around this team. Even Mayor Cantrell posted something with Choppa style on Instagram and telling everybody wear your black and gold on Friday, and it's unbelievable how much energy this city has and how much support there is for this Saints team. It's really been cool to see.
Karen, great stuff. I really appreciate it. Enjoy the game this weekend, and maybe we'll catch up with you in Atlanta when you cover the Saints for the Super Bowl. Appreciate it, Karen.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me on.
Karen Loftus, again, ABC 26 in New Orleans. And listen, I agree with that. It's we talked about this with Kansas City, you know, how much the Chiefs are the part of the fabric of Kansas City, right? They've been around a long time. They haven't won in a very long time. People there are just dying for a championship. They're dying for a win. Then you hear about from Vincent Bonsignor about Los Angeles, how the Rams left. They left 20 plus years ago, and they had moved to Anaheim even earlier. So there was a little bit of a decay in the franchise support. And then they were gone, and then they came back, and then they were terrible, and not many people seemed to care. And now they're electric. It's different in every city. Boston, as much as they love the Patriots, it's still a Red Sox town. Patriots may be creeping in, but it is still a baseball town. In New Orleans, it is a football city, and the Saints are part of the fabric. I tell this story, and I'm going to repeat it because I think it's appropriate at this time. I was working in Colorado Springs, and Colorado Springs, it was early in my career, and Colorado Springs is a young, it's a town, it's a military town, and it's filled with a lot of young people who stay there. They go and work, they work at the base, they go to the Air Force Academy or whatever, they're from somewhere else. It was easy to do national sports topics in a town like that because everyone was from somewhere else. And I remember I went on this big rant about the Saints after Katrina, and they were going to, I thought that they had to move because this was a business, and it was sad that the city of New Orleans was recovering, but the New Orleans Saints had to find a place to go. They could not play in the Superdome. It was being rebuilt. They couldn't find the local businesses that you need, the local support you need. Everybody in the city had been scattered, and the Saints had to leave, and the Saints should play in San Antonio, and Saints should find and relocate to it. And I thought this was great. And I got this call from a guy, and he was in tears, and he said, man, you don't get it. You don't get it. I'm from New Orleans, and you'll never understand. You take away that city, that team, you'll take away the city. If you take away that team, you'll take away everything that city is. And this is a city with Mardi Gras, for crying out loud. But he was saying the fabric of that city is built around this football team. It is the one unifying thing we have. It's the one thing when they stunk and everyone was pointing fingers at them, we still supported them. We were always behind them. We absolutely need the Saints. We cannot rebuild without the Saints if we don't. And he just went on this gigantic, it was one of the best calls, but it was very emotional. And he was really making me see where the Saints are in the city of New Orleans and how important that town, that city is. There are baseball towns. There are football towns. But New Orleans is always going to be a Saints town. It's different. It's a football team that if you live there and you grew up there, it just permeates. And that's the feeling I got anyway from this guy's call. And I've watched that ever since. I've paid attention to it ever since. And when they won the Super Bowl, I wanted to see how badly that city would react. And I wanted to see how badly that city would just explode. And I wasn't disappointed. They went crazy, and like rightfully so, for an organization that almost left because, again, the city was underwater and they didn't know where they were going to play. And they didn't know how they were going to play. The Superdome that housed all those people was destroyed. And was it going to be rebuilt? Was it going to be rebuilt in time? And they haven't disappointed. 800-777-2907. It's Tony D. Ron Culver, SB Nation Radio.
It's a little bit funny, this feeling inside. I'm not one of those who can easily hide. Don't have much money, but boy, if I did, I'd buy a big house where we both could live.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Wrapping up Throwback Thursday, this is Elton John, Your Song, from 1971. And again, we chose 1971 in Super Bowl history, Super Bowl V, Baltimore over Dallas. This is one of the better songs he's done. He's got hit after hit after hit, but this is one of the better ones with Bernie Taupin.
Have you seen that he has a biopic coming out?
Does he really?
Yes, and there is a preview. Go ahead and Google it. But this song is pretty much the background music for what you're watching.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, it looks like it'll be like another Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, excellent, excellent. I saw Elton John in concert when I was in college, and it was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. The only problem that I had with it is that he only did one song for an encore. And we were kind of upset because he did a full show, and then he encore, and he came back out, and he did one song, and he left.
Yeah, you're like, no, man. Encores are three.
I know. That's what I thought. I was under the impression you come out to do an encore, you do a couple of songs. I thought it was built into the show that's what you did.
Yeah, you do. There's definitely two, but usually you get a third one just because.
Yeah. It's amazing he's still kicking around. He's still performing. He's still touring. He's got a farewell tour going on right now, but you know how farewell tours are, right? It's only until the cash dries up, and then you can go back out again.
Rolling Stones have had four of them, right?
Four, yeah. I was a freshman in college 20-odd years ago, and I remember a friend of mine had tickets to see them at Williams-Brice Stadium in South Carolina, and he said, well, better see them now because we're not going to see them again. Little did we know Rolling Stones are going to still keep kicking around 20-something years later. Elton John, Your Song. Oh, that's good stuff. It's a throwback Thursday. SB Nation AM rolling along on SB Nation Radio. Tony D and Ron Culver. Hit us up on Twitter @TonyDRadio. Hit Ron up @RonCulver. But make sure you spell it with two N's.